Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Who Cares Wins. It's Jan Mulligan with Who Cares Wins on channelradio.co.uk. Gloriously sunny Monday yet again. Not as cold as last week, so things are on the up. We hope if you're paddling today with the wet weather we're having, that you won't be paddling for too long and that things will right themselves soon. But we have a fascinating guest on today's show. I'm going to give you a quick clue. So we have with us today Miriam McGuirk. Hello, Miriam.
Hello, Jan. Or as they say in Turkish, merhaba. Bugün senin program olmak harika teşekkür ederiz. And for those of you whose Turkish is rusty, that translates, I'm sure you knew this, Jan.
Of course.
It is wonderful to be on your program today, and thank you.
Well, thank you very much. What a way to start the show. So, as you probably guessed from that, we've got two themes for today's show. Firstly, Miriam is a writer and writes under the pen name of Josie Maguire. And Miriam shares her life between the UK and Turkey, hence the Turkish introduction. So welcome today, Miriam.
Thank you very much. I'm so excited to be here. Excellent. And really great opportunity.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. So we've got some exciting news about the launch of your new book. And so we'll be talking a little bit more about that later on. And listeners, you have a chance to win a signed copy of that book. The book's called Tales from Turkey, Short Stories by Josie Maguire. Listening to today's show and towards the end of the show, we will pose a question for you. And the correct answer drawn on Thursday at 5 o'clock will get a copy of that book. So keep tuned in. Listen to all of Miriam's information, because something she will tell you today will form part of that question. So, Miriam, before we get to Turkey.
Yes.
Where did you start in life?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I started life. I was born in Dublin.
Ah,
in
there
Ireland.
We go. I knew I liked you.
There we are.
My history is Dublin.
Mother from Cork, father from Dublin.
Right.
And at about, spent, as I said, all my summer holidays in Cork. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness I did, because it was just freedom and I was allowed to just be me, and very, very independent, carefree life.
Right.
With lots of outdoor activities. But I found Dublin, I always knew I was a little bit different. And I just found living in Ireland somewhat restricting. And I had this yen to just go and try something new.
Right.
And at the age of 21, I packed a suitcase and left.
Wow.
No idea what I was going to do.
That was
going
to be my question. Where were you heading? You didn't know.
Where were you going?
I didn't know. Well, funny enough, I was heading to London.
Right.
But that was just going to be a very short stay. I was on my way to France. Okay. Because as a child, my father would take us off. I spoke French, it was my second language, and my father would take us on holidays to France, so from a very young age. So I thought, 6 weeks in London, I'll end up in France. Uh-huh. Well, that did not happen.
That was plan A.
That was plan A, and I'm, you know, I have a very, very strong connection with the UK and London, and I lived and worked in London for, you know, 22 years, right. And it's been very kind to me.
Right. And
good
to know.
Yeah.
So what did you do when you reached London?
Oh, my goodness. So
how long have we got?
How long have we got? Exactly. That's one of the books in the future. I did all kinds of things. I mean, I had something like 12 jobs in the first year.
Right.
I tried everything. I even did a course on trainee management in John Lewis.
Uh-huh.
Handbags and gloves.
Oh, you've got the voice.
Handbags and gloves. And listen, that after about 9 months, in between other things, mm-hmm. I had to call that a day.
Right.
But ironically, one of my big, big passions was food. Uh-huh. And that comes from the Cork side of my family. And I just worked and grafted and just learned the restaurant business and knocked on doors. And I ended up actually, within a very short space of time, going into a French bistro,
right.
restaurant, which is on three floors in Hampstead, and as assistant manager. And within a month, they actually kicked out the manager and brought me in as the manager.
Excellent.
So then I become a troubleshooter,
mm-hmm.
because I was very lucky.
No, troubleshooter.
Troubleshooter. What did you say? Troublesome. Me? No. Kerry, I'm the shy and retiring
Yes,
one.
I'm sure you can take that award. Yeah.
And sorry, listeners, just before you, I forgive you, forgive me rather, for not introducing Kerry.
I'm here.
At the start of the show, we had a minor technical hitch and Kerry was out of the room. So Miriam and I started chatting without Kerry.
Yeah,
Kerry
has now joined us. We did.
Welcome,
I'm
Kerry
here.
Hales.
But she's back.
She's back. Bistro, three floors,
Hampstead. And then I was very lucky. It was an English-French company, and they were expanding, and I was on board. And right.
But it's
fantastic.
A tough industry, isn't it? Long hours.
Oh, yes. And I pretended I was older than I was because...
At one time of your life when you want to.
Yeah. The only time. The only time. But we'll come to age, actually. We'll come maybe to age later on.
Okay.
Because the connection with turkey and age, it's,
right. it's there.
An interesting one.
And so, long hours and how...
Very. 16, 18-hour day, yeah. 6 days a week. And on my day off, I would have the accounts to do. I would be doing stock taking. And then at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'd get in a cab and have to report to head office with all my... And this went on. And I remember standing on the roof, which you could look out at the whole of London right. from the top of the roof of this restaurant, and saying... Is this it? Mm. Is this it? I had no one to share it with. And I was a tired lady. But I was passionate about it and loved what I did. And I thought that that's what you did in order to be successful. You right. keep doing.
Yeah.
And I knew no better. And being in London and a big city and obviously wanting the success. It was more about the success for me as opposed to the money.
Right.
I just carried on. And I had a whole mix of other jobs as well over the years, but I always went for the most challenging, the most difficult. You know, it was always bring it on. Can you do? Oh, yes, I can. Mm. And you get lost in that.
She's a yes woman.
I was a yes woman. Mm. You know, I really was a yes woman. And I'd left Ireland, I'd actually always been very fit and very active and balanced. But once I got to setting up and running the restaurants and got into that whole, because it is a way of life.
Absolutely.
It becomes a way of life. And everything else revolves around that. My health, there is no doubt about it, and exercise, everything was on hold. Mm-hmm. But of course, young, you feel you're invincible.
Yeah.
And you think you can master anything.
But something was sticking.
I just carried on. But I can remember actually a stage where I was asked to go to Manchester to set up a restaurant. Mm-hmm. And originally it was supposed to be for 6 weeks. And I ended up staying for 6 months.
Right.
And I remember before I went thinking, how am I going to do this? but then you think about it, then you pick yourself up, off you go. And it was... A major challenge. But because I was able to buy my first house and I got my first mortgage, I thought, hey,
this is worth it.
You know, and I won't even give you the year because we don't do age around here, do we? We don't do age. So you just keep going. Yeah.
But something gave, yeah?
Eventually. The transition was in and out of the restaurant business, but 15 years, I gave that fabulous business my time, and I'm still passionate about it. But then I went into the health industry, but I knew even then I had times over my 22-year career where I collapsed, I burnt out, I would take a few weeks off. But I didn't know how to take care of myself.
And presumably in that kind of industry,
yeah.
other people might be appearing to have similar things.
Exactly.
It's just the nature of the job.
Exactly. And no one knew. And I just carried on. And sometimes I would go back to Ireland. I'd go back to Dublin and I'd have maybe 2 weeks. And I'd say, right, that's enough. Pull yourself together. Off you go again. So you'd go back on the hamster wheel, 600 miles an hour. And... burnout.
Yeah.
So it was, again, as I said, I just didn't know how to take care of myself. And I didn't, and I was on my own. I didn't have a partner. I didn't have family in the UK. I had some friends, obviously, mm-hmm. but there wasn't that much time. Everything revolved around work. And yes, there were some core friends, but I didn't have a social life as such. And so everything actually suffered, but I didn't see it. I thought I have to keep going. Sure. I think I have a real thing now: when you know better, you do better.
Yes.
And so I just kept thinking, well, if I keep going, I'll push
come
through
out
it.
The other side of it.
Push yeah. through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. No. Yeah.
And we're not talking ages, but what sort of year no. are we talking here?
Whoa. When it finally fell apart?
When you started to notice some difficulties?
Believe it or not, late 80s.
Late 80s, right.
So late 80s.
So it's a time when everybody was chasing the dream.
That's right. Thatcher.
The bubble was there. Right.
The bubble was there.
Yeah.
It was all about success and material wealth.
Right.
And the mortgage, the house, the car, everything. It was very much about the material thing, of course.
Yeah.
And it wasn't about the quality of life.
No.
That everyone thought that was their quality of life, if you could show off, you know, what you had,
yeah.
type thing, and work all the hours as well.
Yeah, but a lot of people, yourself included, have found that that's not the case. The body, sooner or later, will just say,
you know,
I've had enough.
I went through all the, now I can see it, I went through all the green, the amber and the red lights.
Right.
And still, I remember I'm having some complementary treatments, shiatsu. Mm-hmm. And I remember that wonderful therapist, and she said to me, Miriam, there's nothing there. Mm. There is nothing there. There's no idea. What are you living on?
Right.
It was pure adrenaline.
Yeah.
Pure adrenaline.
So your adrenals went.
Yeah. Mm. And I went to a couple of doctors. You know, you get a checkup or whatever. And of course, my sleep was being affected. My diet was very affected. My anxiety levels were through the roof. A lot of nervous, anxious tension. And obviously stress of the businesses I was involved in as well. Mm. Because, for example, a restaurant or whatever, people don't go away. They're there every day, every day, you know. So...
It's giant babies, isn't it? They walk into the restaurant and say, feed me.
Yeah, exactly. Now. And it's all about service.
Yeah.
And being as good as that last meal you served mm-hmm. or that last great experience people had when they came into that private health club.
Yeah.
So I remember going to a doctor and just had a checkup and thinking, well, I don't really have time for this. So, and one lady said to me, well, what you need to do is you need to take more exercise and carry some biscuits in your back pocket.
Right.
That was it. And goodbye. Have a nice life. So, of
love
course.
It when they get it right.
Like, yeah, do you know her Twitter handle?
yeah. So, you know, and I thought, oh, well, obviously there's nothing wrong with me. And because everyone else seemed to be working at that pace,
yeah.
I thought, well, I better keep going.
Yeah.
But then one evening, I had a couple of blackouts and again, picked myself up. Crazy. And
but it's what you do when you're on your own.
What you do. And
yeah.
still working the hours. And then Chris and I met.
Mm-hmm.
And 6 months into our marriage, I remember phoning him one evening. I was working. And I said, do you think you could get our lovely doctor? At that point, I had a wonderful doctor that we just registered with.
Right.
And I said, do you think he could come to the house? Because I've just collapsed a few times today. And I don't think I can do this anymore.
Mm.
And got to the house, my house. Doctor was there, Chris was there, and I just collapsed.
Wow.
And he said to me, you are now grounded. And I thought, I haven't got time for this.
Yeah.
And
amazing, isn't it? There you are, collapsed, and your mind's still going.
Still going.
Come on, get up. Yeah. You've got things to do. You haven't got time for this.
Yeah. And he came back 3 days later, and he said, I hate to break this to you because everything had started to collapse. My whole system, my whole body had started to collapse. And I was actually due to have some operations.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, immune system, I wasn't taking in any of the goodness of food. I had prolapses and I had all kinds of really, really not nice things.
Yeah.
I mean, everything had just started to close down. So he came back 3 days later to get some dates in the diary to have the immediate. And he said, after the ops, the scars will heal. You will heal. But he said, I'm going to say something now. And I really need you to listen to this because this could take time.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and then he diagnosed, he said, you have ME. I was like, sorry? because I spent my time advising a lot of other people and some of the studio aerobics teachers and the manager, a member of the studio, and other people just supporting them, because then it was called Yuppie Flu.
Yes.
No one knew. It was like, ha ha.
You can shrug it off. It'll
go away. You know, pull yourself together. You know, what's your problem?
You get over it.
You'll get over it.
Yeah.
Meantime, you know, carry on working. Here's your schedule. Mm-hmm. And, but I was in bed and I remember just, I didn't accept it. Mm-hmm. No. And but I remember for months and months and months. So I had the various ops and so on. He would still on a regular basis come to visit me. But the poor man had Crohn's disease and he had to retire from medicine. So therefore he put me with, you know, I then registered with one of his colleagues. No idea. Sleeping tablets.
No.
Antidepressants. Everyone kept saying to me, are you depressed? And go and have a nice life. Off we go again. So I came back. So, of course, every time. And then when do you think you'll be able to go back to work? Everyone kept saying.
Yeah, we want you back. We want you back.
And because I've always worked, I knew.
Hurry up, get over this.
Yeah. And because nobody knew. And, of course, Chris at that time, my lovely husband, Chris Pollard, who's now been renamed and is sticking, is Superhero.
Superhero, yes.
He was working uptown in London. Mm-hmm. He didn't know. He would leave me in the morning and I was lying in bed. And in the evening, I was still in bed. Mm-hmm. For me to come down the stairs to organise breakfast, it would take me maybe another hour and a half to get back up the stairs. Yeah. I'm in showering, you know. So it was just this constant. So for the first few years, that was my life. So I describe it as being the plant in the pot,
right?
Looking out at the world, right. Mm-hmm. And everything going on around me, and but I couldn't move. I was just looking out. So the frustration, and of course I hadn't come to terms with it,
no. Yeah,
on any level. And every time I saw a window of energy, I thought, what can I do?
Is
what
it,
can I do?
It?
I know, maybe I can start applying for part-time jobs, you know, maybe I can do it. And then, of course, you lose confidence, you lose self-esteem, and, you know, an hourly rate, you'll accept anything. And I actually, don't ask me how, went along to a couple of interviews after the first few years.
Yeah.
And I remember I would arrive there and I would be so, I
drained from
the couldn't even speak. Yeah. So, of course, so that, you know, knocks you back. Yeah. So I kept having a lot of relapses because I never got to the point of healing.
Right. We're going to take a little bit of a music break now, because you're plant in the pot, looking out at the world. And we have a wonderful track now, Fields of Gold, Eva Cassidy, selected by Miriam.
Oh.
It's a special song for you, I know.
Yes, and very special.
We'll be back after this break to talk more with Miriam.
You remember when the west wind moves among the fields of barley, you can tell the sun in his jealous sky when we walked in fields of gold. So she took her love for to gaze a while among the fields. In his arms she fell as her hair came down among the fields of gold. Will you stay with me? Will you be my love among the fields of barley? And you can tell I never made promises lightly, and there have been some that I've broken, but I swear in the days still left, we'll walk in fields of gold. We'll walk in fields of gold. Thank you. some that I've broken, but I swear in the days still left, we'll walk in fields of gold. We'll walk in fields of gold.
In the studio, Who Cares Wins, with the lovely Miriam McGurk. So Miriam, before the break, you were telling us about your harrowing experiences of being diagnosed with ME, and but during the break you told us you've sought endless solutions.
Yes.
And as most people with ME will know, that they only go part of the way.
Correct.
The frustration of that.
Yes.
So your, to all intents and purposes, somebody meeting you for the first time today would say you're a fit and healthy lady. How long would you say you were trapped by the ME?
Well, in actual fact, even now I manage it.
Right. So
and even now I have a very, very strict routine and regime every day.
Okay.
But back then, in terms of literally being removed from the outside world, mm-hmm. I would say the first 7 years.
Wow. It's a long time, isn't it?
The first 6-7 years of not, of removing myself, you know, not using phones, not seeing people, not doing anything social, even down to the point of, at that point, we were living in Walton and Thames in Surrey, and Chris's family have lived in Maidstone all this time, and I had to remove, I wouldn't even, couldn't even think about getting in a car to travel in for an hour.
Right.
And Chris and I had never, ever, ever had a sunshine holiday. Mm-hmm. But I each day I would try and do some form, or not try, I did some form of exercise, mm-hmm. or some form of stimulation, so that, because even my eyesight, to read, driving, all of those things were a real challenge.
Yeah.
And so what I would do is I'd have a little goal. I would leave the house and I would try to get to the gates of this little park. Mm-hmm. And then I'd wonder how would I get back.
Right.
But I would manage it. Stubborn lady that I am. And then eventually I would be able to walk down the path onto the river.
Right.
And I would sit on the bench by the river. And I don't know how, I don't know where it came from. But suddenly, these ideas for poetry came. And what I loved was it was short, it was snappy, and my brain was just filled with these themes and headings for poetry. So I would scribble them down. I'd always bring a notebook with me, scribble them down on paper. I would come back, and at that point, Chris had actually set up a little office. Mm-hmm. In our bedroom, another bedroom came an office, and a computer.
Right.
And sometimes I would, maybe not at that point, but the next day, very quickly type in 10 minutes. And within 48 hours, I had a completed poem. Well, for me, I could see success. I could see a beginning, a middle, and an end very quickly, as opposed to the idea of writing, and it just seemed ongoing. So I was getting a result.
Was this your first experience of writing?
My first experience of writing was actually 30 years ago.
Right.
An editor of Broadsheet in Ireland had asked me to write some reviews and, oh, long story, you know, and I did it. He liked them. He asked me, would I like to do this full time? I laughed. I thought, absolutely not. I was young and I just wanted to, you know, go and see the world.
Yeah.
But in our family, writing isn't in our family, apart from the Irish tradition of writing.
Yes. And you were saying letters. Mm.
My mother would write every week to her grandmother letters because there weren't any phones. And to this day, I very rarely use the telephone.
Right.
Okay, I use Skype a little, but I find that energy. Mm. So to this day, every 10 days, I write a letter to my mother and she writes back.
Oh,
and that is our main
way.
Yeah. Yeah. And even now, if I'm doing a thank you, I will write a card, I will write a... I love to write. Mm. And even from a very, very young age, you ask any friends or family, and even Chris, since he met me, I'm always carrying a pen and I always have a notebook. Yeah. And I'm always making notes. And
that's,
I have boxes.
That's a writer.
It's interesting that tradition. I mean, I'm not a writer. I don't think I'll ever be a writer. But writing to my grandmother, my Irish
I love it.
That was something that I did.
Wow.
As a young kid, it was sort of cajoled into doing it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then just did it. And she only lived 20 minutes away by
but
bus.
It didn't matter.
It didn't matter.
You and, it. You know, it's expressing yourself. It's being creative. Mm. Yeah. And also to receive a letter and the whole tradition of opening the envelope. It's a real ceremony almost. But when we were in Cork, my grandmother would insist that we write to my parents because they were in Dublin.
Yeah.
We had 3 months of holidays then.
Wow.
So we would arrive on the 1st of June and not appear back again till September.
Yeah.
So my grandmother would say, right, girls, you know, write back. So she said, now tell them what you've been doing. So it would be descriptive.
Mm.
And apart from in school, I loved English and the word. And I'm an avid reader, voracious reader, loved reading everything that was put in front of me.
Mm.
But in Ireland then, if you were to sit with a book in your room or in the lab, what are you doing? Aren't there things to be done?
Yep.
Mm.
Can't you help me with cooking? You can clean this and sort out your room. So you were never allowed to just...
It was idle, this reading was idle. Mm.
So I think that's where I got it, because all my sisters are saying, doing,
yeah.
Gotta do, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So the poetry, I just carried on writing poetry. And I didn't think, 20 years ago, I had dinner with my sister and my brother-in-law one evening. And I said to them, because, you know, Catholic, Ireland, all of that, and brought up in a convent, you know, by the nuns, very, very strict. My parents were very strict and quite religious. And I remember sitting having dinner and I said, do you know, I have a plan to write my first book and it's going to be called Irish Catholic and Guilty. But I better not write it too soon because I'd probably be, you know, excommunicated. And I remember my brother-in-law said, what name are you going to use? And I said, well, I daren't use my own name. And I think I'm going to do a take on my father's name, Richard Joseph McGurk. So I said, I'm going to be Josie McGuire. And I remember them saying, what a great name.
Yeah.
What a great name. And hold that thought for a moment, because I actually was dictating into a machine then. And I still have, and it's on the back burner, 87,000 words
of that book.
And it isn't complete. And there is a reason why it isn't complete. And we'll come to that, you know, the Turkish connection again.
Right. So it's all linked in. So you had a question in the break, Kerry.
I did, and I've...
It's gone. It'll come back.
It will.
5 o'clock, we'll phone in. We'll
it was a short story thing. It was sort of if obviously your book is about short stories.
Yes.
And what's the thing of, I mean, you said about poetry.
Yeah.
And that kind of leads into, like you say, you like the start, beginning, and the end, and the
yes. With short stories, for me again, as you said, I could see the end, and it wasn't this long, dark tunnel in writing a novel, because actually,
it's little steps.
Yeah. And I say that to people who talk about writing going forward. Mm. Write a little every day, and it's all those little steps that result in something. You can see it, and you can see you're making progress. But if you're going down the dark tunnel, you think, must do the book, must write the book. Mm. Actually, you give up. And for me, at that point, what would happen is my brain, and I still have to be careful that I don't do too much so that my brain doesn't become fudge. And then everything closes down. So right. I can't think, can't write, can't speak. The words don't come out. It's all gobbledygook.
Right.
So also short stories, for me, people, I've heard people in the Western, not in Turkey, but in the Western hemisphere, always talking about, haven't got a minute, rushing, yeah. dashing, how yeah. are you, busy.
Mm-hmm.
No minutes. So and everyone's talking about being time short.
Yeah.
Well, I thought these short stories are dip in, dip out.
Right.
You don't have to remember characters. You don't have to remember where you were. You can read it, the short story on a train, mm-hmm. waiting mm-hmm. for an appointment, whatever. Or you want switch off time.
Right.
And you delve into a short story. So mm-hmm. it's very dip in, dip out. And it's just fun, simple stories. Doesn't matter whether you remember them, but the time you've enjoyed them. Mm-hmm. And it takes you into another zone and another. I actually have had a few male readers mm-hmm. who said to me if they're feeling stressed, they actually go away and sit quietly, make a cup of tea and go and read a story. And they get lost mm-hmm. in that whole where I am. And sometimes they even go onto my website just get lost in the blog or get lost in the the photographs of Turkey.
Well, the interesting thing is I commute a lot to get to clients, and I've always got a book on me, and I appreciate that I can get from the beginning of a book to an end of a book and have skim read
yes.
because the train bounces
yes.
and you
yes.
get distracted
yes.
or whatever. So I know the rough story, but ask me in a week's time who killed who or did what to. I took your book with me. I didn't dip in and out. I read it from cover to cover because the nice short paragraph, short stories, it just flowed. And it helped with that distraction you get on the train, that if I jumped, it didn't matter because that's that one paragraph. I can do that one again. And I've got the whole story from that one paragraph. So commuters out there, this is a great way to read. I recommend you start with, obviously, Josie Maguire, Tales from Turkey. But once you've got hooked on that, short stories are great for commuting.
Yeah. And I believe there's a really big interest now again in short stories.
There was a time where short stories and poetry just wasn't being published at all.
That's right.
No.
There was always an excuse. And actually, yeah. back in Dublin, I was in contact with a couple of editors and publishing, small publishing houses, and they said, the economy, people are not interested in short stories. Yeah. Poetry? Oh, no. So, no. And I smile because these same editors and publishers have gone on to publish other writers' the short yeah. stories. But so, here I am, you know, it doesn't matter.
That's a question that I was thinking about, was that how did you find your publisher? Because so many people now who, one, think, okay, I have a book, and they yes. might spend their hours writing the book, whether it be short stories or long stories. There's so many avenues now to self-publish
yes.
and or getting a publisher.
Yes.
And obviously that didn't come easy. Can you give us a...
Yeah.
some ideas of how you found your publisher. And
it's funny, you know, you talk about when you put it out there, when you're ready. Mm-hmm. Because actually, some of these stories, which we'll go into in more detail if we have the time, is that the stories, some of them were ready 7 years ago.
Right.
I mean, I'd written it. That was the easy bit, writing it. And I actually even then had enough, you know, the 2-3 books were there, the nuts and bolts of them. But because of confidence and all the other, and I didn't think they were good enough and who would possibly want them and blah, blah, blah. But actually, I'd started to write for a website in Turkey. And I suddenly thought, hold on a minute. I can develop these stories because they were just little captions of life in Turkey.
Right.
Not about my life, but life in Turkey. And a lot of expats at that point were interested because they had just come to live, to move, sure. or were thinking about it. So that very positive response. A few people asked me, are you going to get a Turkish editor? Well, no, because it's an Irish woman. It's my view of Turkey. Tales from Turkey was really born from those initial little captions that I was posting out to other people. So I decided to take control and start to develop the stories. And they, again, just came fast and furious. Someone said to me, why are you letting them just sit and gather dust? They've got to get out there. But I didn't feel confident enough. And
but something tipped you.
Something. And I finally decided, because every year I set my goals and my plans. And I said to Chris in September 2012, by hook or by crook, I don't know how, I don't need to know how, but I am putting it out there. And for 5 years, I've been visualizing myself. Now, don't laugh, in a Chanel suit on a podium, holding up my Tales from Turkey book with a big audience and doing a book signing. And that's what I kept visualizing. And I said to Chris, that's what's going to happen by the end of November 2013. He said, great. Whatever I can do to help. Came back to the UK, because I'm back and forth all the time. Came back to the UK, was introduced to a would-be, could-be possibility of an editor, a small independent publisher. And we clicked at that time. And he needed to go away for 10 days as to whether, because his genre was completely different to mine. And he came back and said, yes, let's do it. But I have to say to you that the last year leading up to publishing has been the most challenging learning experience.
Right.
Tricky. And there were a few times when I thought, yeah, maybe I'm going to pull, you know, am I going to pull the plug on this? Can this really happen? But, you know.
What were the learnings that you could, like for our listeners, the people who, I mean, finding an independent publisher, that's great, but like it's
you have to hold true to what how you see it and what you want, right, number okay. one. You have
so your
to,
vision.
My vision, my words, and also you have to really take control.
Right.
And learn quickly, and you have to be in the driving seat, and you have to continue to move it forward.
Right.
At
your
pace.
So you're pushing and pushing and pushing.
You are pushing.
Okay.
And you are also, and it may be different, everyone has different experiences.
Yeah.
And I will say to you that as and from the 1st of March, I'm actually, it's coming back to me. I am Miriam McGurk's the publisher. And in my next two books, I'm actually, I'm looking for a new editor and a new publisher.
Okay.
But that's okay. Yeah. That's absolutely okay. But I would say to you that as long as you're prepared to be in the driving, and I have worked 6 to 7 mornings a week for the last year. And even now, husband keeps saying, that's enough. Walk away. Because actually, writing the stories was the easy bit. Then you have the lead up and the countdown. Right. Because once I set the day, 21st of November.
Right.
And obviously I've had an incredible core, small group of people around me. Because we don't do it on our own. But I would say don't give up. Keep going.
Yeah.
And keep the vision and keep the focus.
So you've got a really strong, clear vision of what you want, and also you're very goal orientated for you, and you know that that's worked for you in the past. So that's and interestingly now you've learnt a lot from going down the publishing route, and now you can take that forward to publish yourself.
Yes. Well, actually, actually, I may publish myself, but also I am very open. I'm putting it out there equally. If there is an editor, publisher out there who is tuned in to me going forward, and don't get me wrong, I had a great, you know, I've learned a lot from my editor and publisher. I have learned so much, and I am forever, ever grateful for that. I really, really am. But I think as well, I'm quite independent. And as you say, goal orientated.
She's very independent. Yeah. I'm quite independent. She says meekly.
But actually, I'm very discerning now about how I live and work and do. Okay. But I have found, because meeting deadlines, and I have met every deadline, everything I've promised people, I have done. I've never, ever once said, no can do. But if I wasn't able to, hands up and said, could we delay that for a week or two, or where will that set us back? And I delivered on time and I set the date 6-8 months before and that happened as well.
Okay. So
sorry, Kerry, I'm just going to say, if we take a little break now for a bit
and
of
then
more
we
music,
want to hear more about the live, work, do part after our break.
So this next track, Russell Watson, You Raise Me Up.
Oh, inspiring man, man and his health issues and he's still there and
Join us after this track.
When I am down and know my soul so weary, when troubles come and my heart burdens me, I am still and wait here in the silence until you come and sit a while with me. You raise me up, I can stand on mountains. You raise me up, walk on stormy seas. And I am strong when I am on your shoulders. Raise me up to more than I can be. There is no life without its hunger. Each restless heart beats so imperfectly. But when you sometimes I think I glimpse eternity. You raise me up, I can stand on mountains. You raise me up, walk on stormy seas. And I am you raise me up to more than I can be.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to Who Cares Wins. The lovely Russell Watson and the snippets we're playing, Elvis Costello, Every Day I Write the Book, because every day Miriam McGurk.
Miriam McGurk.
As Josie McGuire.
It's confusing.
The book. So the book itself, The Tales from Turkey. The big question I had.
Yes.
Why Turkey?
Indeed. I asked myself that many times. It was never on my list of places to visit, never mind to spend time there. As it happens, my husband, Chris, he actually has worked in textiles for many years. So worked out of Turkey for many, many, many years.
Oh.
And he, but never had a holiday there. So for 35 years, he was in and out of Turkey. And a colleague of his said to him, you guys, have you ever thought about having a summer holiday? Well, there was no way I could even think about getting on a plane. Mm. And we'd never actually gone away. We'd never been on a plane together from the time we were married, and me 6 months after being diagnosed. So he came home one day with tickets. And I total panic.
Yeah.
You know, down to the thing, how can I even pack a case? Mm-hmm. And I actually, would you believe this, picked up on the day we were traveling an expired passport, got to the airport, all of that.
Yeah.
So I was like, Turkey? Why? Anyway, I thought, let's do it. Let's see what happens. We get there eventually after long trauma. I was in a high anxiety. It took me the first 5 days to recover. My body clock were 2 hours ahead in Turkey, and just being in this very different zone and hearing this language I didn't understand. But from the first day, Chris would literally almost carry me down to the water's edge. We were a few hundred meters from the water's edge at 8 o'clock in the morning. And I would come out of there feeling energized and feeling this feel-good factor. And Chris had never seen me relaxed, happy, jokey, able to do more.
Health crisis after your marriage. You hadn't been well when you met
He knew me from when I was in the health business, and he knew me, but he didn't really know me. Yeah. So he'd never seen that kind of fun, relaxed, you know, humorous Irish.
Did he want to send you back?
Side. He did. So, sadly, it was only a 2 week stay. And literally within 10 days of being back, slump.
Right.
So we then talked about how can we reignite this? This is working. What can we do? So we looked at moving countries. And we did lots of research. But the one thing we realized, we needed climate. We needed it to be natural. I needed to be very comfortable there. Again, one of the complementary practitioners I was seeing, wonderful, wonderful lady, she was looking at Portugal, but she said to me, Miriam, people with MS and ME, it's been proven that southwestern Turkey is very, very special environment and has helped and supported people. India as well, by the way, Himalayas and India. Mm. And so I started to do my research, and I thought, well, maybe if I went out on my own for a month initially and see how I coped, because I would have to do everything myself. Mm. We found a little house by the beach. And at that point, so that's what I did.
Right.
On my own, with my little notebook and my dictionary and my pen.
That sounds like the idyllic, isn't it?
Combination. You've got the environment, as you say, which is good for the health.
Mm.
You've got the diet.
Yeah. So oh, my goodness me. Mediterranean diet. Yeah. And fresh. I mean, it's in the ground in the morning. It's in the sea in the morning. It's on my table by lunchtime.
I think any writer who's listening to this is going to go, oh, I want to do that.
Yeah.
Let it be me.
Yeah. Well, you can do it. Do it, guys. Do it. Absolutely. Because if I can, anyone can. Absolutely. Mm. But interestingly, a friend of Chris's gave me this really basic word processor. And I just started to write. Wow. I just started to write because of my experiences. I just was inspired and I was just captivated by life in Turkey. And
you said to us earlier, names have been protected.
Yes.
Protect the innocent.
Very protected.
Guilty, depending on the story you read.
Yeah, because actually a lot of the names now, it was only the first. So I was spending then up to 3 months a year on my own in Turkey. And that gave me the energy so I could come back and cope with the weather here and the environment
here. It's amazing, isn't it? So you've gone over to Turkey. There you are by the beach because you're doing it for your health. But the byproduct is that you've actually nurtured your writing and that you managed to write this amazing book through accepting that you need to soothe your body and your spirit then comes alive.
Absolutely. Because in actual fact, just to go back a little bit, I hadn't, when I was writing on the little word processor, I hadn't still accepted that, that I how I was and what I needed to do. But what happened in those times, because the Turks and their kindness and generosity and hospitality, they would gather around me. So, of course, they didn't realize they were taking my energy, and I actually needed to spend still 75-80% of my days on my own.
Right.
And I didn't talk about it because they wouldn't understand. So after spending the months, the various months there, I said to Chris, in your business, you do not need to be based in London. You can be anywhere.
Right.
And he literally said, OK, let's do it. And so with a great leap of faith, I started to actually spend up to 5 months at a time. But it was only when I moved to the mountains of Turkey. We had a first year by the beach.
Right.
And we bought our first little tiny summer house, never thinking we would live there. It was literally just a summer house, but inspiring all the same. Mm. It wasn't the real Turkey. And it was only when we moved to the mountains, I was still saying to her, what's my niche? What's my niche? What can I do? What can I do? But it was only when I moved to the mountains, I was removed from everyone.
And so you assumed
nobody could get to me.
Yeah.
Right. So no one, because in Turkey, they'll just knock on the door and appear.
Right.
So being up the mountain, they would never do that, you see. So therefore, I thought, I have time. And then, of course, I was writing the small bulletins out to these websites. And I started the discipline of writing.
Yeah.
So it as you say, it evolved. Mm. Nature took care of me. The universe took care of me. And I remember Chris saying to me, you don't need to do anything. And his father, my gorgeous, gorgeous father, like a father to me, doctor, very well known in Kent, in Maidstone. He was known as the baby doctor. He used to say to me, Miriam, we are human beings, not human doings. Stop. But that didn't resonate with me when I was here. But when I was in Turkey, because of the environment.
You've got to be in that space to be able to hear these things. People give you such messages, and sometimes it will just, you know, your doing would just yeah, that's really nice to hear. Yeah, okay. And next, and next, and next.
That's right. And also, because of the pace of life in Turkey, and because people give you time, they give you whatever time you need. And they always say to you, problem yok Miriam, which means no problem. Or they'll say, yavash, yavash, slowly, slowly.
Oh, perfect for you. Yeah, perfect.
Really, really. And that's the one thing, mindfulness.
Yeah.
Mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And being in the moment.
Mm.
And that grew and grew and grew.
Wow.
So, the book, Tales from Turkey, by Josie McGuire. Loads of fascinating stories. You're a people watcher, aren't you?
I'm a real people watcher and observer,
Sunday in Port Gökçek? Is that how I pronounce it?
Gökçek, yeah. Gökçek, yeah, the port, yeah.
Chapter. Watching people go by, different people that use the port. Sleepy Sundays. Yeah. There's livestock, there's dogs, there's geckos, there's hens.
There are. There's
something for everyone in this book. So,
I believe so. People are animal lovers, you know, and also coming from the West, for me to be up a mountain with chickens and feeding them, and then dogs. I'd been afraid of dogs, but through Chris, these strays appeared, and you know, at one point I was fostering, I think, 5 puppies and feeding them with our mum. You know, so life can change.
Yeah,
life can definitely change.
Well, we've had a fascinating afternoon chatting with you, Miriam. As always, Angela always says this: the hour has just flown by. We did promise listeners a chance to win a copy of your signed book. So if you've been listening today, everybody, Miriam has come from a country of origin near to my heart. We would like to know where Miriam was born. It's the country. You don't need to name the town. If you name the town, that's bonus points. You'll get an extra signed message. But if you can email us your answer to whocareswinsradio@hotmail.co.uk. Say that again. It's whocareswinsradio@hotmail.co.uk. The deadline for this is Thursday, 5 p.m. All correct answers received by that time will be put into a hat. The winner will be notified to Miriam, and Miriam will sign the book and send that out to you. So it's coming direct from Miriam.
Please send your address in with your email.
Oh, that would be helpful. But if we've got your email, we will chase you for any other information. But yes, your answer to the question, What country was Miriam born in? Send us that answer and your address, and we'll announce the winner next Monday. If you want to buy a copy of the book, if you can't wait till then, Miriam's website, www.talesfromturkey.com. Also available from Amazon as a download, ebook, or Kindle, and all good reputable bookshops. They'll have it. Tales from Turkey by Josie Maguire.
It's fab.
Thank you, Jan.
You're very welcome. And you're at an event soon.
Yeah. Oh, I am so excited about this. March the 27th, 2014, I shall be attending, along with so many other wonderful women in business in Kent, the Kent Women in Business Awards night. And I am a promotional supporter of the awards. And I'm absolutely thrilled to be exhibiting under my banner, Tales from Turkey, in the mini expo on the evening. And this positive event, it's in its second year, and it encourages personal and business growth among some real professional female business stars in Kent. It really is a hotbed of talented women, as you ladies know.
Mm-hmm. I'll be coming.
You're amongst me.
Come meet me.
And they have found their niche and passion. And I am also very, very grateful to the ladies who write the magazine Kent Women in Business, because they are writing, it's by women for women. And I think it's so important that we support all women in business. So that's going to be a really exciting evening for us all, I believe.
Excellent. Well, if you're going, drop by, say hello to Miriam, mention Who Cares Wins.
Mm-hmm.
You might get a signed copy, you might not. She might sell you a copy.
Yes.
You never know. And Kerry, you've got a shout out for Tim, who was on last week.
Tim, the wonderful Tim! Tim Box is absolutely wonderful. And I know, and a few weeks back as well, you had the lovely Sonia Hurran, parent and teenager, specialist coach and speaker.
We wonderful. Had everybody on
You've
the show.
Had everyone. Sorry, you know, get you everyone that's a...
Anyone who's a new one wants to be on our show. Yeah. So, Tim, don't forget, he's got a one-day workshop, hands-on hypnotism. If you listened last week, please do listen again, where he hypnotised my hand to the table. I was quite shocked at my embarrassment. So please don't forget, it's on February the 22nd, which is next Saturday. It's in Maidstone.
It's a week Saturday, isn't it?
A week Saturday. Saturday week. And the wonderful Tim Box, his one-day workshop, hands-on hypnotism. It sounds like it's going to be a really good fun day.
Excellent. And next up, very quickly, our acronym quiz.
Acronym quiz, number 5 out of 12 weeks. So two linked acronyms this week, CRB and DBS. From week 28, show 24, It was from Diana's Supported Holidays. You need to get them both, people. So, and if you need to have a look on our Facebook page, there are all the other clues on there. But you need 12 to win, and we're on number 5.
Excellent. Thank you for that, Kerry. Next week, we have Stephen Haynes. Stephen will be telling us about Workplace Health and Wellbeing Movement. It's a network group for anyone involved in workplace health. Also, Navigator Health. It's a business providing integrated workplace health solutions. And MyPins, or it might be MePins, consultancy services driving health and wellbeing in the workplace. So the topic, health and wellbeing in the workplace. Join us on Monday, 3 o'clock. As always, today's show will be available through Listen Again, repeated on Thursday at 12. Don't forget to enter the quiz to get your signed copy of Miriam's book, Josie Maguire's Tales from Turkey. Thank you again so much for being with us today, Miriam.
Jan and Kerry, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you
You're
so
very
much.
Welcome.
And I look forward to meeting you soon.
And Angela's still out down under, posting lots of photos. If you want to follow her on Twitter, even, AJB Angela, to get the latest on her trip. Have a good week, everyone.
Bye.
Take care.